Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and thank you for joining me on today's programme. I'm Philippa Hitchin. Coming up today, an appeal for peace in war-torn Iraq, local initiatives to promote dialogue between Christians and Muslims in Egypt, and protests by Catholic leaders in Britain about a programme alleging the Church deliberately silenced the victims of clerical sex abuse. Welcome to the programme. An appeal for peace in Iraq, where Christians and Muslims have lived side by side for 14 centuries. Those were Pope Benedict's words to pilgrims gathered for his last Angelus address at Castel Gandolfo on Sunday. The Pope is due to return to the Vatican from his summer residence on Wednesday this week. His appeal for peace in war-torn Iraq came one day after a meeting with the Chaldean Patriarch of Baghdad, Emmanuel III Deli. My colleague Charles Collins takes a closer look at what the Pope had to say.
Pope Benedict turned his thoughts to the people of Iraq during his Angelus message on Sunday. The Holy Father spoke about his meeting Saturday with His Beatitude Emmanuel III Deli, the Patriarch of Babylon and the Chaldeans, saying the head of Iraq's largest Christian community told him about the tragic reality faced daily by the dear people of Iraq, where Christians and Muslims have lived together for 14 centuries as children of the same land.
Auspico che non si allentino tra loro questi vincoli di fraternità.
The Holy Father said that he hopes these bonds of fraternity among them will not be loosened. He also assured the people of Iraq of his spiritual closeness and invited everyone to ask Almighty God for the gift of peace and harmony in what he called that martyred land. The Pope was speaking for the last Sunday this year at the papal summer residence in Castel Gandolfo. He returns to the Vatican on Wednesday. He took the occasion this Sunday to remark on how October is the traditional month of the Rosary.
In this month of October, dedicated to the Holy Rosary, we ponder with Mary the mysteries of our salvation, and we ask the Lord to help us grow in our understanding of the marvelous things He has done for us.
Pope Benedict also remarked on the fact that October is dedicated to the missions and that World Mission Day will be celebrated on October 22nd.
La missione della Chiesa è il prolungamento di quello di quella di Cristo.
The Holy Father said that the mission of the Church is the continuation of that of Christ, taking the love of God to all, announcing it with words and concrete witness of charity. He pointed out that in his message for the upcoming World Missions Day, he wanted to present charity precisely as the soul of mission. After reciting the Angelus, the Holy Father recalled the United Nations World Habitat Day, which this year is dedicated to urbanization and the situation of the squalid suburbs in many of the world's large cities, which the Pope said is one of the most serious problems that the 21st century is called to face.
Esprimo il mio incoraggiamento a quanti a livello locale.
He gave his encouragement to those working to help people living in such places so that they may be assured of worthy conditions of life and the fulfillment of their basic needs, as well as the possibility of realizing their aspirations, especially within the family and peaceful social coexistence. I'm Charles Collins.
Well, as you heard, Pope Benedict and the Chaldean Patriarch of Baghdad met together on Saturday to discuss the difficulties that Christians face in the mainly Muslim country. Numbering only about 1% of the population, Iraq's Catholic communities have long formed a small but significant part of the religious makeup of the country, and church leaders work hard to maintain good relations despite all the difficulties and the sectarian violence that continues to plague the nation. Right across the region, Catholic leaders are focusing especially on easing tensions that resulted from confusion over Pope Benedict's comments on Islam in his lecture at Regensburg University in Bavaria last month.
As you know, the Cardinal Secretary of State had asked the local churches to get in touch with authorities in the different countries, particularly in Muslim-majority countries.
Archbishop Michael Fitzgerald is Apostolic Nuncio to Egypt and the Holy See's representative to the Cairo-based Arab League. Before taking up that post earlier this year, he served for nearly two decades as First Secretary, then President of the Vatican's Council for Interreligious Dialogue. Archbishop Fitzgerald told me what he and the local bishops in Egypt are doing to further this vital work of dialogue between Christians and Muslims today.
The local church did set up a delegation. Already the Coptic Patriarch made a statement which was published in different newspapers, and then they established a delegation representing different churches, Catholic churches present here in Egypt, and they made a visit to Al-Azhar, and then I returned for the second visit, which was to the Minister of Religious Affairs here in Cairo. These visits were, I think, useful. They have perhaps not been entirely satisfactory in the sense that it seems that the Muslim authorities here are not completely satisfied with what the Holy Father has said since his Regensburg speech. But we hope that, and we were looking at things, ways in which we can try to improve the situation here.
You've been involved, of course, in this dialogue for many, many years. How would you characterize the situation there in Egypt overall, and how have these current tensions affected that dialogue?
Well, there is a certain, I suppose, inner tension in this country, you know, different tendencies within the population. There is a growing Islamic sentiment in the line of the Muslim Brothers, as had been seen in the last elections, when people who belong to this group of the Muslim Brothers were elected to Parliament, not as Muslim Brothers, because that is not allowed, but as independent members of Parliament. And this group is active, and some of the people who were reacting rather severely to the Holy Father's words are of this tendency. There are others who are, I would say, more open-minded and who are would be willing to discuss, I think, and would be willing to exchange views on what has been said about Islam and what needs to be said maybe about Christianity. And I suppose there are lots of people in the middle. There are lots of people who react on what other people have said rather than what they have read themselves.
So what are you and the other bishops trying to do in very concrete, very practical terms to try and build bridges, to further the dialogue, to improve relations, if you like?
Well, I think that the local churches, which have a strong network of schools, of services to people, that they will continue, I think, discreetly along this line, but trying to perhaps consolidate the relations in those institutions and through those institutions. I don't expect any, you know, rather spectacular initiatives coming from the church. I think it is they would probably want to be quietly Christian, let us say, and continue their witness as Christians in everyday life and show. Now we're in the month of Ramadan. Ramadan has just started. It is a particular month. It is celebrated with great joy, in fact, here in Cairo. And I think the Christians will be attentive to their Muslim brothers and sisters and inviting them for the traditional iftar, showing that there is no hard feeling between Christians and Muslims. So I think they will continue in this rather discreet way.
You mentioned the other Christian churches there, particularly the Coptic Church. Relations aren't always easy with them, are they, either?
No, this is true. Some of the statements that have been made or attributed to, because sometimes things are written in the newspapers which are not actually the statements of the leaders, but they're a statement attributed to the leader of the Coptic Church, Pope Shenouda, was rather severe. But it seems that he says, no, I did not say that. So saying that the Pope's words were against Christian doctrine. So there are difficulties there, and there will be an ecumenical effort as well. I will be taking part in an ecumenical meeting, and I've been asked to speak about Christian-Muslim relations. I presume that there will be many questions about the Holy Father's speech and the reactions to this speech and what the Catholic Church is thinking about this and what it is doing in different parts of the world. But I hope it will be an occasion to share with Christians of other denominations how Catholics feel about this and how they react.
Since Christians are such a small minority there in Egypt, it's clearly very important to try and improve these relations within the other Christian denominations. Again, what else can you see? What else is being done perhaps to try and improve this cooperation amongst the Christian churches?
I remember when I first arrived here, this was in April, the new patriarch was installed as patriarch. There was a very wonderful liturgical ceremony for that. And it was interesting to see that the Pope Shenouda had sent three Orthodox bishops to be present on that occasion. And there were representatives of other Christian churches too. Now, in mid-October, a new auxiliary for the patriarch will be ordained bishop. I don't know whether leaders from other churches will be invited on that occasion. I would hope so. You know, there are these special occasions where people can be invited, and so this is a sign of respect, a sign of friendship for the other churches. I would hope that they would continue in this way. It's same with the Muslims. There will be an opportunity later this month when the message for Ramadan, for the end of Ramadan, comes from the Pontifical Council for Interreligious Dialogue. We are hoping that this will be an occasion also to maybe visit leading Muslims or Muslims at different levels and present them with this message as a sign of goodwill.
How would you characterize your relationship perhaps with some of these leading figures within the Muslim world? Perhaps just a superficial level, or do you manage to work together on things at a deeper level?
Well, I haven't been here long enough, really, I think, to say that we're working at a deeper level, but I hope this will come. The relations are cordial as far as I am concerned. They did know me from the past, and I benefit by that, but it's not that we sort of meet every week and sit down and study together. The Minister for Religious Affairs is an extremely busy person. Sheikh Al-Azhar is solicited in many different ways. So that sort of work of the ongoing discussion, the ongoing exchanges, probably has to be developed at a different level. And there are people doing that here. They have been doing it for many years, and they will continue to meet and to exchange.
And finally, you're also the Vatican's representative to the Arab League, which is based there in Cairo. Can you tell us anything about reactions from within this Arab League, reactions from other Muslim countries there?
As far as I know, the Arab League didn't make any statement at all about the Holy Father's speech in Regensburg. But I was happy to see that the representative of the Arab League in Rome, who is also a representative to the Holy See, was present in the meeting at Castel Gandolfo when the Holy Father received the ambassadors of different majority Muslim countries accredited to the Holy See. I think that is a very good thing. And presumably he will have reported back to his headquarters here. I'm in contact with the officials of the Arab League, and I'm hoping to develop something with the cultural side of the Arab League. I sent along a proposal recently, and I hope to take this up again in October. This is, you know, that might be a possibility of promoting cultural exchanges between people of the countries of the Arab League and certain Western countries. As you know, the Arab League is an association, if you like, of 22 different countries. The Arab League itself doesn't have the authority to do much. It is the countries that decide, and so they can suggest, they can promote, and some people from the Western world coming and visiting institutions here in Egypt or in other countries, perhaps in Jordan or perhaps in the Lebanon as well, various countries there, and then scholars, people from these countries going to countries of the Western world, particularly to the United States, in fact. But we'll have to see how this goes. I know of another proposition that certain people from Al-Azhar are being invited to the United States to improve their English, for instance. This would be considered a service, and it would help in this cultural understanding.
And my thanks there to Archbishop Michael Fitzgerald, Apostolic Nuncio in Egypt and the Holy See's representative to the Cairo-based Arab League. And from Egypt, we go over now to the United Kingdom, where Catholic bishops this week are making a formal complaint to the BBC over a documentary that accuses Pope Benedict of covering up the problem of child abuse by priests. The programme, broadcast in England on Sunday, alleges the Church and the former Cardinal Joseph Ratzinger had a deliberate policy of sheltering perpetrators of abuse and silencing the victims. The head of the Bishops' Conference in England and Wales, Cardinal Cormac Murphy O'Connor, has written to the Director General of the BBC to protest about the programme, which the bishops describe as a deeply prejudiced attack on a revered world religious leader. Archbishop Vincent Nichols of Birmingham heads the Catholic Office for the Protection of Children and Vulnerable Adults in the United Kingdom. He says the BBC should be ashamed of the standard of journalism used to create this unwarranted attack on Pope Benedict XVI.
This programme has two strands in it. One is a very graphic and distressing portrayal of the damage that child abuse does, especially through the adult's life. So we hear of people who have been abused, and we hear an abuser who has been found guilty admitting quite graphically what he did. That is fair enough, because it's not a bad thing to keep before our eyes the need to work hard for the protection of children. But the second strand of the programme is very different, because it uses two documents of the Holy See to say that the person to blame for this lack of control in the lives of priests, the slowness in following up allegations of abuse, is the Holy Father, because he, both as Cardinal Ratzinger and now, has been one who has insisted on a regime of secrecy within the church about these things. And that, of course, is wholly unfounded and absolutely untrue.
As you say, this program talks about two documents. The first one issued back in the 1960s, and then a document that was directly under the responsibility of Cardinal Ratzinger issued in 2001. Tell us a little bit more about these two documents, what exactly they are and how they're being used on the program.
The 1962 document isn't actually about child abuse at all. It's about the crime of solicitation in the confessional. So it gave detailed instructions to bishops as what they are to do when either a priest is accused of soliciting or he hears of somebody who has been soliciting in the confessional. Now, that document is complicated because it has to keep in mind and uphold the seal of the secrecy of confession. But the document is about the seal and about soliciting within the confessional. This program says that it's the foundation of secrecy about offences against children, against child abuse. Now, while that might be an aspect of solicitation, it is certainly not the main thrust of the document, and the document is not as such concerned with child abuse. In the program, they say it is. And in the program, they say this is the foundation policy of the Holy See to keep these things private. And that is erroneous, and it's very offensive. The second document is the document of 2001, in which bishops were instructed to inform the Holy See about a number of crimes, including that of child abuse. That was to ensure that in every case of child abuse, proper canonical procedures were followed. The document says that the program says that this document obstructs civil or criminal investigations, which in my experience is absolutely untrue. What I've tried to explain is that a priest is subject to two legal systems, the law of the land in which he lives and the law of the church. This document from 2001 clarifies how the law of the church is implemented. It does not interfere with the proper investigations of crimes by civil authorities.
As you say, you have been heading this effort by the Catholic Church in England and Wales to introduce really good child protection policies there. But the programme really calls for a global church protection policy, doesn't it? Instigated by the Vatican. They say that will be the only way of really restoring trust in people over this issue.
Well, it's a mistake. I mean, it just simply does not understand the nature of the church. And the nature of the church is it's made up of dioceses who have bishops with proper authority, that we get guidance from the Holy See, and indeed in these cases, each case is sent to the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith, and that then we get detailed guidance about how to follow the canonical procedures properly. But it is a total misunderstanding to suggest that the church is a single worldwide corporation in which all matters go to the Holy See. But of course, that would be a very nice dramatic story, wouldn't it? And that's what this program on false bases attempts to do. And it is very mischievous. And what I regret is the people who made the program did not come to anybody in the Catholic Church in England and Wales to ask for advice.
Are you saying that this program is really part of a wider campaign, perhaps, or attempt in some way to attack the Catholic Church? I mean, this isn't the first time you've had run-ins with the BBC, is it?
No, but the BBC is a very big organization, and I wouldn't suggest for one minute that the BBC as an institution bears any malice towards the Catholic Church. Not at all. I think there are semi-independent units which work under the broad umbrella of the BBC. And I think what this shows and a number of other programmes show that the editorial standard in those units is very much below that which should be desired for a corporation as prestigious as the BBC. I mean, this programme is actually made up of very old footage, undated interviews with people, and it's just a mishmash. And it's not something of which the BBC as such should be proud.
Does this kind of programme in any way set back the work that you're trying to do to introduce or to enforce these child protection policies that you've worked so hard on?
I think what it'll do is remind us all of the dreadful damage caused by child abuse. And to that I do not object, even though it is distressing to watch the frankness with which priests and victims speak about what has happened to them. but in creating a false impression of how the Catholic Church works, it is counterproductive to our proper efforts to create a safe environment for children in the church. Obviously, I don't know any of the cases figured in the program, and I'm sure there's lots more that we can be doing to be attentive to those who have been abused in their youth. But I also sense that sometimes program makers, such as the one who have made this program, look for people and trade on their distress, quite frankly. They've done it before, and they find someone who is deeply distressed and, as it were, elicit their story from them, maybe take them around the world to try and create a situation which is very dramatic. And I'm not sure, in the end, how helpful all of that is to the victims concerned.
My thanks there to Archbishop Vincent Nichols of Birmingham, Chairman of the Catholic Office for the Protection of Children and Vulnerable Adults in the United Kingdom. And that's all from me, Philippa Hitchin, and from all of us here at the English Programme for today. But we'll be back on the air at the same time tomorrow. Be sure to join us then if you can. In the meantime, don't forget you can always find our news and feature programmes on the internet. Look us up at www.vaticanradio.org and click on the English icon. Tune to Vatican Radio. Laudato Jesus Christus.